Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 5, The Demigods Appeal to the Lord, Text 44. Namostu dasma upashanta shaktaye swarupya swaraja lava pratipuritatmane guneshu maya rachiteshu vritibir nasajamanaya nabasvad uttaye namaha. Our respectful obeisances. Astu. Let there be. Tasmai. Unto him. Uprasanta shaktaye. Who does not endeavor to achieve anything else. Who is free from restlessness. Swaraja, completely independent. Lava, of all gains. Pratipurita, fully achieved. Atmane, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Guneshu, of the material world. Which is moving because of the three modes of nature. Maya rachiteshu. Things created by the external energy. Ritibi. By such activities of the senses. Nisajamanaya. One who does not become attached. Or one who is above material pains and pleasures. Nabasvat, the heir. Uttaye, unto the Lord who has created this material world as his pastime. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Let us offer respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is completely silent, free from endeavor, and completely satisfied by his own achievements. He is not attached to the activities of the material world through his senses. Indeed, in performing his pastimes in this material world, he is just like the unattached heir. Purport. We can simply understand that behind the activities of material nature is the Supreme Lord, by whose indications everything takes place, although we cannot see him. Even without seeing him, we should offer him our respectful obeisances. We should know that he is complete. Everything is done systematically by his energies, Parashya Shakti Ravividaiva Shuyate. And therefore he has nothing to do, Nitasya Karyam Karanam Javijate. As indicated here by the word Upashanta Shaktaye, his different energies act, but although he sets these energies in action, he himself has nothing to do. He is not attached to anything, for he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Namostu tasma upasanta shaktaye swaraja lava pratipuritatmane kuneshu maya rachiteshu ritibir nasajamanaya nabasvat uttaye. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is completely silent, free from endeavor, and completely satisfied by his own achievements. He is not attached to the activities of the material world through his senses. Indeed, in performing his pastimes in the material world, he's just like the unattached air. Prabhupada mentions a number of points in this purport. One is that we should understand that behind the material nature is Krishna. Now, how he is behind the material nature, Prabhupada further explains that although everything is taking place by his indications or by his will, we may not be able to see him directly. Still, we should offer him respects. In other words, we may not be able to see him with his present eyes, but we can see him with our intelligence. By observing the material nature, how it's functioning, we can understand that there's a supreme intelligence behind it. Just like Ajendra the elephant did not exactly know who that supreme person was, but he had faith there was such a supreme person. And therefore, when he was in difficulty, he prayed to Krishna, or prayed to that supreme person to come and help him. And since there is no one but one supreme person, and since he was praying for the supreme person, therefore Krishna came in the form of Vishnu and saved him from the crocodile. Therefore, although it seems rather repetitious, hearing again and again that this material nature has a controller behind it, and it's not us. Now, as long as we're thinking ourselves to be the controller of the material nature, or a candidate to become a better controller of the material nature, or we're fearful that maybe our control of the material nature will diminish in the future. So as long as with that mentality, material nature, the illusory energy will not allow us to accept that there's some other controller other than ourselves. Good example of that is Hiranyakashipu. He went through great austerities to become the controller of the material nature. Such severe austerities that people won't even believe the austerities he went through. And indeed, by the supreme controller of this universe, Lord Brahma, he received benedictions that apparently made him a controller of the material nature. He received all eight mystic powers. He was so powerful that even the demigods were acting as his humble servants. Even Narada Muni took the position of acting as his servant. But it was all illusion, because when the actual controller came, his so-called control became apparent that he wasn't the controller behind everything. As a matter of fact, he was killed by the controller. Now, his whole idea of going through all those austerities, that if I want to become a controller, that first of all I have to conquer death. In other words, as long as my body keeps on changing and I can't control it, and as long as the final destination of this body, I have to leave it because it'll be destroyed and disappear. Even the final version of this body will eventually disappear and there'll be no more versions of this body. So if I want to control anything, first I should stop this body from changing. And if I can't do that, then at least I should stop this body from going through a final change called death. Otherwise, my proclamation, my affirmation that I'm the controller doesn't have any meaning, because something else is controlling even the body that I'm identifying myself with. And therefore, how can I say that I'm the supreme controller if I can't stop my own body from changing, or if I can't stop myself from having to take another body or leave this body? So Hiranyakashipu tried very hard, and according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, he failed. Now, we ourselves, the conditioned souls, are actually very sincere trying to stop death. As a matter of fact, the whole material world is simply an attempt to stop death. They claim that modern society has made progress in stopping death. Just like they asked Srila Prabhupada, they said, Swamiji, when he was in England, why are so many people in India getting sick and dying? So Prabhupada said, well, it's a fact that in India people get sick and they die. But I've also noticed, since I've been in your country, I've noticed a lot of people here get sick and die. As a matter of fact, in India the death rate is 100%. And I heard that in your country also the death rate is 100%. So there's really no much difference between your country and ours. You're just making more elaborate arrangements. That when someone's about to die, you put them in a hospital and put tubes through them, and you won't allow them to die. The soul's trying to get out of the body because it's so painful, but you refuse to let the soul out. And you think that's progress. Because you're so afraid that death is the end. They, even if you're going to have suffer right until the end, at least you'll be there to suffer. You think that's the most important thing, is to be there. Because there's complete ignorance of the fact that the soul is eternal and that the soul has a purpose of life. In any case, it takes some intelligence to at least even theoretically understand that on one side, the so-called authorities say everything is accidental. But what kind of excuse, what kind of explanation is that? In other words, on what basis do they say everything is an accident? If they actually claimed everything was an accident, then they should just throw some marbles up in the air, and by accident they'll float in an orbit around the earth. What accident can they duplicate that they claim is an accident? Can they, by accident, create even one blade of grass? If all these blades of grass are here now, by accident, how do they reach that conclusion? Have they even by accident created one blade of grass? So if they can't create one blade of grass by accident, how can they assume that all the other blades of grass came about by accident? So actually, their so-called knowledge also didn't come about by accident. They had to cultivate ignorance for many lifetimes to get it. To deny what's obvious requires a lot of endeavor. A lot of endeavor in the mode of ignorance. We covered so much that even the things that are obvious become, one becomes unaware of. That nothing comes about by accident of any organization that has any elaborate organization. We have absolutely no experience that anything within our body or within this universe, which has an elaborate organization, comes about by accident. We may not see, for instance, every summer or every spring, all these flowers come and that they're elaborately painted. We may not see the painter, but we see the painting. And therefore we assume that there's a painter. If you see one of these paintings here on the wall, we assume there's someone who painted them. We don't assume they came about by accident. So when we see all these flowers elaborately painted, we must ask, who's the painter? And how did he paint them? So here it says, he doesn't have to take a paintbrush. By his arrangement, through his energies, all these flowers get elaborately painted. Now, why can't people accept it? Because they're envious, basically speaking. They're envious of anyone who's better than them. And what to speak of the conception that someone's unlimitedly better than them. Then they become unlimitedly envious of that person. In any case, at least if we try to understand things properly, then we can become free at least to some envy and theoretically accept that there can be such a Supreme Person who could be organizing the entire universe at every moment, and at the same time, he doesn't have to go through a great endeavor to do it. Now, if we wanted to paint 10 flowers, we'd have to spend the whole day probably painting 10 flowers the way Krishna has done it. What to speak of unlimited flowers all over the universe. Therefore, not only do we have to accept that there's a controller, but there's a controller who's doing everything without any effort. We don't see Krishna in 100 trillion forms painting all the flowers. They just automatically seem to get painted with great intelligence. So it's not only he's a controller, but he's doing it effortlessly. And he does, as Prabhupada points out, he doesn't have to practice. Krishna, as a 7-year-old boy or 8-year-old boy, he lifted Govardhan Hill with the left pinky. But he didn't practice the other 8 years lifting pebbles and rocks till he got up to lifting Govardhan Hill. Even at 8 years old, that he automatically was able to lift Govardhan Hill and keep it aloof, aloft, for 7 days and 7 nights. So this makes the envious demons even more envious. It's bad enough that Krishna is controlling everything, but he's doing it without any effort. To understand this requires a lot of surrender. And the only way to actually surrender is to engage in that person's service. It's not enough to understand it theoretically, but we have to practically understand that we have a choice. Either we can take whatever energy we have and then utilize it in Krishna's service according to his desire, and then we'll be able to understand him better. And if we don't engage our energies that we have influence over, apparently influence over, and engage him in Krishna's service, starting with our body, mind, and words, then Krishna remains hidden from us. Naham prakasya sarvasha yogamaya samavrita mudoyam nabijananti lokoyam ajan avyam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. To them I am covered by my eternal creative potency, yogamaya, and so the deluded world knows me not, whom unborn and inexhaustible. So Krishna, his energy called yogamaya, will hide him from us if we are not engaged in Krishna's service. Bhakti mam abhijananti yavanyas chasmi tatvada. One can enter into Krishna's understanding only through devotional service. Otherwise, there's no way of doing it. Therefore, for those who are not engaged in devotional service, and that may be, as Krishna says in the 18th chapter, idam te na tapaskaya, nabhaktaya kadachana, nichashu shushave chaham, nichamam yobusuyate. There are a number of persons who refuse, under any circumstances, to engage in Krishna's service. What to speak of accepting that Krishna is God? It's not enough to even accept that Krishna is God. One also has to engage in his service under the direction of his authorities, his representatives. But those who are napaskaya, those who won't engage in any austerity, and the main austerity is sitting there hearing that Krishna is God. This is a big blow to the false ego. To actually hear and accept it is a big blow to the false ego, who's making so many plans to control the material nature in order to enjoy it. Make so many plans for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Apart from what Krishna wants us to do. Of course, we have to eat, sleep, mate, and defend in this world, but we should inquire from Krishna for how to do it. And we should do it for him. So, the accepting how Krishna is the controller of this material universe begins with hearing. So we're sitting here, we're hearing, and that's great austerity. First of all, most of our bodies don't like to sit in one place for a very long time. And to hear constantly that we're not God is not exactly what we're used to. Because we're hearing that there is a God who is so powerful that not a blade of grass is moving without his sanction, that he's aloof, and that we have to inquire from him constantly what to do in order to please him. So, of course, we're not prepared to do that. Nor do we have the capacity to come, because we'll walk outside of here, of this class, and we'll forget practically immediately. Because it's time for prasadam, we take it for granted. Krishna definitely wants me to take prasadam. I don't even have to question it. But we'll sit down to take prasadam. The question is, how are we going to approach the prasadam? Is it there for our enjoyment? Of course it's there for our enjoyment, otherwise we wouldn't eat it. But what's our attitude? That Krishna, this is my payment, I deserve at least this, or I deserve a lot more? Or we're appreciative that Krishna has provided this to me, and I'm going to relish it. I'm going to eat prasadam as an act of devotion. So I have to be in the mood of devotion, love, appreciation, tasting the prasadam. So that's a great austerity. Generally, we like to be in the mood that I'm the Lord, I'm King Kong, and here's the prasadam here for me to devour. Show my prowess. That a normal person can only eat so much, but I can eat so much because I'm so powerful. Just bring it on. Or as an act of devotion, we're actually relishing prasadam and remembering Krishna with appreciation that he's so kindly giving me this prasadam. And I'm eating it with devotion so that I can perform activities with this body in devotion. According to how we eat, it was probably how we're going to act. Because eating is the most immediate opportunity for lording it over the material nature and enjoying it. So if whatever our mentality is when we're eating, it'll probably transform itself into our mentality when we're doing other activities also. So if we can control our tongue when we're eating, then it's much more likely we'll be able to control our tongue when we're speaking. If we're eating with devotion, we'll probably speak with devotion too. And if we're speaking with devotion, then our minds will probably be more devotional, and we'll probably be able to act more devotionally also, more consistently. If we can't get happiness through prasadam, then we're not going to get happiness through anything else, because our other activities won't be devotional either. Very unlikely. Of course, under certain circumstances, we may be completely in maya, and we may put ourselves in a circumstance like preaching, where we have no choice but rely upon Krishna, and therefore get some taste from that. But if we don't transfer that taste into our other activities, then we'll be very focused only on one type of activity where we're actually going to be Krishna conscious. But we should expand our Krishna consciousness to all kinds of activities, from eating to even sleeping. Before we go to sleep, we should try to think about Krishna, so then even if we're not conscious when we're asleep, that we may be even thinking about Krishna when we're asleep. Because during the day, we're always thinking about Krishna. It's much more likely when we go to sleep, we'll think about Krishna. And even mating, defending, if one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then even these things will be done as a service to Krishna. And therefore, we'll think about Krishna. it's not a waste of time to try to understand how Krishna is controlling this universe, because that happens to be where we are right now. We're not in the spiritual world, at least not in Goloka Vrindavan. And whether we go to the Goloka Vrindavan will not depend so much about our hearing about Goloka Vrindavan as our willingness to get out of the prison of our consciousness, so that when we actually do hear about Goloka Vrindavan, we'll hear about it with pure consciousness. If you're in a jail and you're hearing pastimes of free people, it's not going to help you very much. When you get out of jail, then maybe you can hear about the pastimes of free people, and then you can participate with them. But when you're in jail hearing about the pastimes of free people, what good is it going to do you? It can inspire you to get out of the jail. So to get out of this jail, we have to make every activity, yat karoshi, yat ashnasi, yat jahosi, dadasi, yat tapasi kondiyat tat kurushva vimarpana. First Krishna says, patram pushpam palam doyam. Whatever you have, offer it with devotion, whether it be fruit or flower, some, whatever you have, offer with devotion, with love, bhakti. And then whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, as well as steries you perform, do this as an act of devotion to me. Then you'll become free from all these reactions of our past activities. Shubha, shubha, pala, evam, moksha, se, karma, bandhanai, sannyasya, yoga, yuktatma, vimukta, mamupashesi. Shubha, shubha. This is ninth chapter. In this way, you'll be free from bondage to work and with its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you'll be liberated and come to me. So first we have to become liberated. Liberated of our false ego, our false conception that these things are mine, whatever it may be, they're meant for my service, or service my friends or my family, whatever we think. Free from this false ego. No, the ego is, I'm simply the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And therefore, with Prabhupada in the background, because Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya, I get so many instructions, and through his knowledge he's giving me, I can understand what he wants me to do under the circumstances. Even in the midst of so many instructions and sometimes contradictory instructions, by taking shelter of Prabhupada and our acharyas, Krishna will give us the intelligence to understand how to best satisfy everyone and render service to Krishna in our everyday activities. So that we'll constantly think about Krishna, constantly think about our acharyas, and through them, the six Goswamis, who are the representatives of the Panchatattva, and by association with the Panchatattva, feel their separation from Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, and therefore become eligible to associate with Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan through feelings of separation. So we don't jump into the spiritual world. We go through our acharyas to get out of this material world into the spiritual world, and that way make our lives successful. So here it says we have to see Krishna in this world. We have to accept him as the controller, that he's working without any effort through his different energies, and therefore we should offer our respectful obeisances unto him with gratitude that he's giving me an opportunity to serve him even in this world in spite of my causeless unwillingness to do so. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
Hare Krishna. I was reading about the Krishna consciousness in the USSR. So I was thinking, how did they have that strength to handle all this persecution and all the problems they had?
Well, I don't know if every devotee was persecuted and had the strength. There were some who were able to do that. But relatively speaking, their life was not so, we could say, materially enjoyable. And therefore, when they took shelter of Krishna, they got another experience, which was much higher. And they didn't want to lose that. because there was no alternative. It wasn't that he gave up a heavenly lifestyle. No, they were suffering. They took to Krishna consciousness. They got some enlightenment and hope for life, and that was being taken away by external force, and they refused to give it up. So we should try to get such a taste in Krishna consciousness so that we won't give it up under any circumstance, even at the time of death. Anything else? Have you done right? Didn't ask any questions today? Wow, okay. Thank you very much. Krandaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.